ready to do this for one last time this season?
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers, everybody, to the House of the Dragon finale. It is done.
I can't believe we're sitting here talking about the finale.
So, who are you rooting for, the Greens or the Blacks?
Stop asking stupid questions.
Let us know on the internet. Twitter.com/GameOfOwns. We have been getting a finale-sized amount of owns tonight, and I've seen a finale-sized dragon, and I've got a finale-sized Mountain Dew Voodoo to celebrate the Halloween season in front of me. And like I said, this is our last conversation for a last new episode of House of the Dragon for a long time. There's rumors circling on the internet about how long that's going to take. We don't know.
We've survived worse, though, so I feel pretty confident. I just can't believe we're sitting here at the end of season one of House of the Dragon. I so vividly remember you and me having conversations about what we're going to see in this series and where we're going to end. Where do they think they're going to cut it off at? What part are we going to get to? We've been saying Storm's End, Storm's End, Storm's End. And it was unreal to see that unfold and hit that hard. It was just unbelievable.
That was my favorite sequence of the whole season.
Was it really?
Yeah, beginning from probably the book, definitely flying away on his dragon. And then the entire sequence at Storm's End and obviously flying away. The conflict between the dragons in the sky and the storm and breaking into the clear sky too. The way that it was shot, the way that it felt. I mean, the inside the actual throne room with Boris Baratheon, that was almost beat for beat exactly like it was in the book, and it felt so satisfying.
I know.
There was a lot of that this episode, too. A lot of that space that we've been talking about through the course of the season, the way that they handle the blocking of the characters. And I think that the style of these two episodes, the Alicent Rhaenyra back-to-back episodes that need to show so much of what the style of the way that they're doing it, showing what the day unfolds that after hearing the news about the king passing away. And so it just is a perfect little situation of getting to show the speed of what a book chapter would feel like, basically, which is something that we all love because it works. Mm-hmm. Everyone the people that read A Song of Ice and Fire love it so much that it got to this point.
Mm-hmm. That same patience, that same seemingly slow burn to the climax at the end. I think that I was not surprised in a shocked way, but just surprised, I guess, in an excited and glad way to see how much they slowed it down. There was no rushing to get to Storm's End. There was no rushing to get through any conversation. And I think that was so much due to Rhaenyra's vibe of let's slow this down, let's figure this out, let's have some conversations. In contrast to Alicent's vibe, which was very flustered and we need to make this happen yesterday. And so I was happily surprised to kind of have that pacing mirror their vibe, just like you were saying, like we were reading in the book. It felt so real and it hit all the highlights we've been loving from this whole season. These long, drawn-out looks between our characters, the tension between the different families, the inability to pick a side, even as wild as Aemon was in this episode. It all seemed to be one big mistake.
Yeah, that's... you can't really say it's different than Fire and Blood because we don't really get a POV like that.
The nuance is lost, yeah.
So, I mean, it's the same for how Rhaenyra dealt with the news all day and how the dynamic between she and Daemon is balanced about how to handle this usurping of the throne with the infantry, with her feeling like there's some leftover angst of his earlier life, her and him having it basically come eye to eye whenever he holds the crown first. Mm-hmm. All that small stuff.
We got the news being broken to Rhaenyra that Luke is gone, but we don't hear it. We just see her reaction, and her face says it all. Just the absolute sadness and fury and pain. I loved how it was just shown to us like that, you know, that we didn't necessarily have to be told what was happening. We could just see everything on her face.
So what's the sort of parting message do you think that Hot D is giving to its audience before this break?
It felt like this is war, you know? That's how it felt to me, and what I wrote in all caps is this is war.
It's just like Ollie running into John's study and going, oh my God, Benjamin Stark is back.
Right.
He's got news that's going to change the course of this entire mystery. You won't believe it. John goes, well, I'll put my shoes on.
Mm-hmm.
That was the feeling of Rhaenyra at the council to all of us watching, especially those who didn't know what was coming when she was talking about approaching the conflict peacefully. And making sure that they have support. And even when they have support, never being the first ones to shed blood. And not just the choice of who acting first, but her entire vibe that she was giving off was, it was messed up, but we're going to do this in the way that the guy that wore the crown that I have right now would have.
Mm-hmm.
And
she's looking at the bigger picture, the Song of Ice and Fire. She's trying to ward off the darkness from the north.
What do you think the temperatures on people and the Song of Ice and Fire prophecy, connecting it to Game of Thrones and the dagger at large?
It's so hard for me to say because I felt like in that moment, I didn't particularly love the way that moment played out between the two of them. It felt a little bit too heavy-handed, in my opinion.
There was some heavy handing.
I mean, there was a lot of, yeah, both figuratively and literally. So I would be curious what people's reaction to that might be. But I felt like I agree with Rhaenyra in a lot of ways. We need to figure out who's actually on our side before we start throwing people to a cause that we're still trying to determine. And we need to shore ourselves up. We can't just start burning everything down. So I understand that. And I also understand that she feels like she has this greater duty to this greater thing, but at the same time, no one else knows about this greater duty to this greater thing. So you just look like you are indecisive. I mean, Rhaenys loved it. She felt like that was the right move to put her support behind. But I felt like that conversation with Daemon, I don't know, I thought him doing that to her was a little strange. I know he's supposed to be this intense character, but we haven't seen that for so long, and we've never seen that between them. And I know it's a big situation, but I just felt like, what? Why are you doing this? You know what I mean?
I think he's just hearing some crazy shit being said by someone. And
that he cares about.
Now is not the time
for
us to be talking about. For a stretch there in the finale, it felt like we were going to have a plan that made sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the Benjen coming back situation is. It's like, oh, well, he left, it was mysterious, and now he returns, and this all makes sense, and it's going to answer a lot of questions that we have yet to be answered. And as we're crescendoing toward the very end of the season, knowing what this war council's approach is, and knowing that it feels like something that I guess the modern TV audience watching would agree with. It's like, oh yeah, this feels kind of cool. The music was really hopeful. And then Storm's End happens. And after that, I mean, remember how upset we were saying that Allison was okayed for in the cave after what happened with Aemon?
Mm-hmm.
It all felt like it was making sense. Otto handed her the page from the first episode.
I know.
That she tore
that was so cute.
Had all the information memorized.
That was so cutie.
And
annoying.
Remember how we were talking a couple episodes ago about how, you know, it could be an uncontrolled conflict with the kids and their dragons and that part of humanity, angst and youth and ambition for people that don't quite have their area settled yet, which makes total sense and actually fits really well into this Song of Ice and Fire universe, and I think would have been a good jumping off point for season two. So people that haven't read Fire and Blood that are just watching Hot D, the last thing they're seeing is Rhaenyra's face basically change like a work of art that is made in a certain way where you can look at it from different angles and it's saying a different thing, and it goes from the sadness and the surprise and just the, I guess, just disconnectedness of the void that comes with something that's so heavy that you really can't even show how you're feeling, to I'm going to fucking destroy them.
She has no choice. I mean, she's lost so much in this episode. Her dad, her premature baby, which that whole scene was...
That was wild. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
You were saying that she was a little less busy than Allison, because, I mean, for one, Allison's in King's Landing, so that the pace of her day would definitely be different. But I'm like, wait a second. Allison also didn't have to give birth to a stillborn baby that day, too.
That was a painful scene. I mean, she goes into premature labor basically due to the shock and the stress of the whole situation. And then she loses Luke. And I was really surprised from just watching the TV, like following the narrative of the TV show. It's so surprising that she just so willingly sends her sons, who are so untested and unbattled. And I know she thought that Storm's End was going to be an easy sell and that he was going to be so happy to host a prince. But after what, after Rhaenyra was so intense to Jace and to Daemon, well, in turn, Daemon, don't do anything without my leave or my word. Mm-hmm. I need to be the one calling the shots. And she said to Luke, or she said to Jace, you're my next in line, so we can't do anything reckless. It just seemed like a wild decision to send her little kids with no backup and no help out into these really tumultuous situations, regardless of how close you think you are. No terms other than you got to do what we got to do. No gifts, no offerings, nothing. Just kind of your little kid is just being sent into a storm.
Yeah, it's weird that they didn't send an offering with them, it being based completely on the oath that was sworn before, not even by himself.
Just something, right? Like a little something. So
people don't like that. They're like, oh, yeah, I owe you this. Well, it seems like power is sort of shifting around a little bit. So debts, inflation, exchange rate, everything's not exactly the same.
Especially when the other guy's standing in the room.
So was it, well, yeah, but and already talking to one of your daughters. I already picked one of them. Do you think it's they don't know to send a gift, or it's that they don't think that they have to? Because moving forward, that's going to be a... I mean, the Starks might like that, to be honest,
right,
that kind of attitude. But otherwise, I think a lot of people are going to be opportunistic and, if anything, just don't like the vibe of that.
Mm-hmm.
You owe me this.
I think it's just hope.
Preemptively.
What did Corlys say? Something, I need to find it in my notes, but he makes some comment to that effect to Rhaenyra when he talks about how, he said, hope is the fool's ally.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just expect these men who swore this oath X amount of years ago,
yeah,
hasn't been discussed, hasn't been followed up on.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you share blood from a couple generations ago, you can't just expect them in this time of chaos as a ladder, so let me get some of my own,
mm-hmm,
to just willingly bend the knee, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It almost feels like a Ned Stark type of honor situation.
Yeah, or Viserys's logic too.
Yeah, you know, which... To Daemon's point and to Corlys's point, this is a time of war. So we can't assume anything.
Yeah, and Corlys had to trade time away from his family and his body to garrison the Stepstones,
mm-hmm,
and remove the Triarchy. By the way, RIP to the Triarchy. It sounds like they're officially gone forever. I kind of hope that there's a little bit of a skirmish. They come back a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Hot D season 3, maybe.
A little more Drehar.
A little, well, the energy Drehar of Drehar. You know what I mean? Like his son or his grandson. He probably has a lot of bastards floating around. I think in the context of everything, especially after receiving the crown, being brought to you by a knight that traveled very far, who's in this kind of armor with a cloak billowing behind him, with hair down to his waist, saying, listen, I'm kneeling with the crown of your father, and I swear myself to you, the one true queen. And there's enough people there to do the pageant around, and there's something about just the crown and everyone committing to pretending to the pageant that just makes it feel all a little bit more special than us simply just all being in the same place together.
Of course.
The kids are a little bit less bought into the majesty of it, even when they were kneeling for their mom, you know, they're just like, eh. And there's a lot of adults that are like that too, but out of respect, they do, except for Rhaenys. And that's the vibe at Dragonstone. And like I said, it's got that mystical Ollie running to John's office feeling to it. And so I think that with the energy and with Daemon describing his plan with the Riverlands so sternly, and just seeming like all these things were in place and it also helps that there's people there that aren't in their family that are grown-ups too, mm-hmm. that are talking, that are able to speak plainly, that don't sound crazy. They give off this whole, it's like being in Disneyland. It's like we all agree to this happening and you have a crown on and there's
she
logos.
She looks so good in her crown too.
So whenever the idea is brought up, it's like this in every sci-fi movie, every adventure movie, there's something like this when there's adults and kids or there's a younger person that works for the army and they're like, can you do this? And he just so happens to have this strange skill that fits the requirement. And in this case, it would be, I can fly faster than a raven.
Mm-hmm.
And so just with the hopefulness and the vibe in the moment, I think that's why she made that decision. I don't think she meant to make a decision where she would actually send one of her kids or both of her kids into harm's way. I mean, that was just a total guess. And I don't know about the aim. I never imagined Amon doing what he did on accident like that.
Well, because it just adds to this conversation we've been having all season long, which is these moves that we read that felt purely bad, quote unquote bad, are actually not so black and white, which is what, like I said, we've been saying that all season long. And so Amon is doing Amon things and teasing this kid and flexing and trying to scare him and genuinely looking for, trying to rile him up, essentially.
That's a crazy way to rile someone up.
It's nuts, but he's a nuts kind of character. And
right. So
it's just another situation being taken way too far and not being able to show, well, restraint, but both of them were doing their best to control their dragons, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Both of them lost control of their dragons is essentially what happened.
The head burn was so stupid.
It was an accident, you know?
Well, I mean, not an accident for his dragon. But
no,
yeah.
But for Luke, it was an accident. And so, like I said, once again, we get this situation that's spiraling out of control. We both know what the outcome is, but every step of the way, you're hoping maybe he can fly fast enough away, or maybe it's not going to play out like this, or maybe he's going to duck between these rocks and he's going to be able to get home.
When he went into the ravine, it felt like that maybe we're going to change the story for a second. Like, he gets away and I don't know. It's going to be written in another way. I don't know.
I had the same, I guess, wishful thinking that we wouldn't have to see it play out.
Yeah.
But I think adding the nuance of just the way Amon's face fell, basically saying, how am I going to tell my mom what I just did?
Yeah, you just wrecked the car.
You wrecked the car
worst.
And you started a war. I mean, the whole thing, we've been able to dance around the issue and no blood has been shed. No, I mean, I understand that Rhaenys made a big statement, but...
Oh, yeah, you're right.
No,
but those are just small folk.
Just small folk and no big deal.
Nah.
Nobody to care about.
Nah.
No family blood has been shed yet. But here I am misstepping because I'm young, because I'm untested, because I don't have control over my legitimately terrifying dragon. I loved, once again, just the additional nuance that we get from how we expected it to be on page. I don't know about you, but when I read it, Amon is evil.
Oh,
Amon
yeah.
is so evil.
Sure.
He did that because he thought it was fun, you know?
Uh-huh.
That's not how it played out.
Well, it was fun for a little while until it got really serious. More hot D philosophy.
The storm happening.
Dude, it was so cool. I really liked it. I really liked it. I just think it the way that it was paced, the way that it was shot, I feel like we're finally getting closer and closer.
It was
some of the most harmonious polish of their goal. You know, like they really knew what they were making and it really just worked out.
Mm-hmm. And it was cool to see dragons battling each other like that.
Yeah, it was cool to see them taunting each other too. I just really liked the difference in scale. I think it's a great precursor to give us more of that impression of really the scale of the conflict, of potential conflicts between people who have dragons. It's not just about having dragons. It's not just about having Valyrian steel. It's not just about how many men you have, all these different things when it comes to holding power in this time period on Planetos has realities attached to it. And arriving at a place to be a messenger has realities attached to
mm-hmm.
it. And you might be a prince, but you're also kind of a little kid. But conversely, that might be a little kid, but he's also a prince. And right. the tastefulness of his swooping in and arriving and going into the hall, that's how Star Wars should look. That's how all that stuff should look. It was just, man, they nailed it. I can't wait to watch it again. I particularly loved Luke flying into the rain,
mm-hmm.
but I loved when they got through the storm clouds and it was bright outside mm-hmm. and that was the place that it went down. And I loved that it wasn't a big jet of fire. I loved Vhagar's huge mouth snapping and biting and the violence of it. And I loved to see the body flapping and falling, wow. still mostly together.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like a shark bite, probably, like a severe mortal wound immediately.
And Arrax's little tiny puff of fire, essentially, next to Vhagar. A graze,
yeah.
Also, the Vhagar flying over them, just the that shadow.
Was so awesome, the first shadow.
One of the scariest things I've ever seen
yeah.
in my life.
Yeah, there's those things on the internet where they show you the scale of like a video game map.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then
yeah,
they
yeah.
show you one from 15 years later and it's so much bigger. It was like that. It was like we thought dragons were crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this.
Or like whales, different sizes of whales.
Yeah, that's true.
I was thinking about how Vhagar was this really cool, exciting, epic dragon. This whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And when Aemond jumped on Vhagar's back, it was like this really amazing scene. And Vhagar didn't seem that scary. It just seemed storied and big. But man, they made Vhagar look mean.
Oh,
like
yeah.
I was genuinely afraid.
Oh, yeah.
And there's all these like extra scales and ropes. And he just looks, or
she
just looks, Aemond and she just look like wild. And they look like they're in the ocean. I don't know. Like,
okay, I think I know what you mean.
There was just so much happening with the way that Vhagar was moving that was just creepy.
It's like when you get really old, you grow hair at a bunch of weird places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Slimy almost.
Sometimes maybe.
Was it Rhaenyra who said, but we haven't had these dragons go to war.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know what war with dragons is like.
Unbattled, she said.
Yes. And seeing Vhagar kind of brought that to life for me. It's like we might have 13 dragons, but mm-hmm. they have literally the scariest dragon I've ever seen in my life.
Exactly. It's like, how many dragons would it take to take down that dragon?
Right.
Great question.
Or take down the rider of that dragon who was nuts. So.
Well, maybe that's the key then. Just like you know, the White Walker army. You mm-hmm. don't need to take down the whole army.
Right, just the one guy.
Just the guy who plays the guitar solos.
It was so well done. So I totally agree with you.
I love what you said about Vhagar, though. That's so true. I mean, I was always scared, I'll tell you that. Just the scale. Animals that are that big, it's like, wait a second. The power in your left leg and how delicious it also looks.
Mm-hmm.
On Driftmark, she's asleep. She's sleepy. Like, don't wake me up. I'm
right.
I feel, and honestly, that's the vibe that GRM put across in Fire Blood too. You sort of feel that same thing. Just a sleepy amongst all the other dragons. Don't bug me. And I think that was successfully conveyed, especially with the having a young child tame you. You just have a little bit of a soft spot. You saw what Daemon had to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not what young Aemond had to do.
Mm-mm.
It was very simple. And so it was like Vhagar was doing him a favor. And so it would impart that personality that maybe I wouldn't be so ruthless. Vhagar's down to do something we really haven't seen dragons do in this TV show universe yet, which is just act like a Jurassic Park dinosaur. And
I know.
You.
Yeah. Uncontrollable.
We haven't really seen that.
Mm-hmm.
So hell yeah.
It was awesome.
Hell yeah.
It made me so excited for season two because we've been...
You love when people die.
No. But we've been building... There hasn't been a lot of action per se. There's been a ton of political maneuvering and intrigue and moments that made me gasp. But we haven't seen a lot of fighting or action. And we've been so highly anticipating the dragons doing their thing. And now we finally get a taste of it and it's only going to escalate from here. And so we'll talk about this over the next couple of weeks as we recap the season and look forward to what we might be able to think about for season two. But overall, I just really loved how they set the ground for Fire and Blood in this season and how we covered so much time so patiently without having to rely on a big moment like Storm's End until we got to the big moment at Storm's End. You know what I mean? Yep. Like, we could have skipped so much farther ahead in the conflict to get to the drama or to get to the...
Yeah, it was just cuts. It was just flesh wounds before this. And, I mean, Viserys going to the throne kind of took place of a big violent moment, you know, and Otto didn't get killed on the bridge in this episode.
I wish he did. I thought he was gonna... He looked really powerful, though, unfortunately.
Really?
With the sunset behind him, and he was so smug.
Yeah.
He was so... I've never hated Otto.
You gotta be smug to go there, dude.
Never hated Otto more than this. Yeah, that was my... I actually, because this whole time we kind of been loving Otto a little bit. Because we're like, that guy's out there playing the game. He's loving what's happening. He's throwing parties. He's hyping up our king.
Sure.
And he's making moves. He's playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
But him standing there facing them, talking about the king and how the king's mercy as he's come to treat with them, I was like, Otto, we've been so patient with you this whole time. And now it's time for you to go. But he did look really cool with the sunset behind him.
So. He did look cool. Just powerful.
I got to give him that.
Cool, for sure.
Rhaenyra taking his hand pin and throwing it off. That was awesome. I'm glad we got some, like, something, you know? Because he needed his head chopped off in that moment. I also don't know how you felt about it, but I was like, okay, the Maester's going to give Allison... Rhaenyra, this little note from Allison that basically says, I love you forever. Please come back and let's be friends for life. But gives her this old callback piece of paper. And I'm just like, I don't know how you felt about that. But I'm just like, what do you think is going to happen? Like, you think that that callback is going to be enough to put a Band-Aid over the years and years and years of wounds? You didn't even talk to me about any of this. You just made these moves. I'm not even there. My dad just died, and this is what you're going to give me? To me, that would make me even more angry than some sort of pleading letter or something. It was like throwing it in her face of, I know we're good friends, so I'm going to take advantage of the situation.
There are certain kind of assholes that think that the thing that they're so confident about really matters to other people.
Right.
And so she just believes that they got it all figured out, even though it was a lie, even though it was stolen.
So delusional.
Well, plus the whole realm doesn't like women being their leaders, too. So there's a little bit extra for their claim.
Of course.
Yeah.
But I really want to talk about Corlys. I assumed we would just kind of get word of what he was up to, that he was getting better. But instead, we actually got his presence and his opinions and his whole...
And he
deal?
Flipped on, well, I guess he and Rhaenys basically flipped by the mid to end of this episode. He had his opinion, and we all sort of thought it was different based on what he said before, but that was pre, really, Laenor and hearing about his thoughts about it, and all of his time spent apart from his family and fighting in the Stepstones.
I would have been interested to hear more of that conversation, because then by the time we see Corlys again, he's totally... in on Rhaenyra, and he seemingly has come to Rhaenyra's side on that. And maybe that was enough to flip that, but I really loved how he was like, we could just go home, stay out of the conflict, relax, hang out. But I think essentially what Rhaenyra was saying was, war is probably going to happen. We can't just sit out the conflict. And she's the one who seems to have the most level head out of anybody. And so I just liked his whole... He's part of this older generation. I guess that's Daemon's generation, too.
Sort of. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't really lump him into that. Yeah.
Well, Daemon was at that age where he was younger, but it's like, we're both old.
Right. He still kind of had a seat at the table.
Corlys is pretty cool. You're not too old, man.
Right. But Corlys kind of adds that almost fatherly figure that we are missing with Viserys gone. And so I kind of, his presence there, and as he walks into the War Council and he sees his granddaughters and... standing next to...
So we're going to do this.
Yeah. So, okay. So the ties are too deep still. We can't just kind of turn our back on family.
So Rhaenys is the one that turned him, though.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's neat. So she's not completely out of this.
And we... one of those questions that we had at the end of the episode of last week was, okay, so she warned Rhaenyra, but then what? Is she... what's her actual role going to be? And it seems like their family is going to play a pretty pivotal role. She's like, I'm going to go monitor... I'm going to go fly around and monitor the step zones and kind of make sure everything's fine. Or not the step zones, but the sea, the passage outside of the step zones, I guess. So it's basically all the same thing. But I was just really glad to have their wisdom and presence in this very intense situation outside of just Rhaenyra and Daemon's little pals. Rhaenys didn't just completely give over her allegiance without first feeling out the situation or talking to her husband or really trying to make a decision and not rashly jump into something. And I felt like that was a good thing for Rhaenyra to see play out. And was just...
Makes it all feel way less cartoonish, too.
Yeah, it feels really real. And, you know, when Rhaenys didn't kneel when Rhaenyra was crowned... It's like, it felt very intense.
Yeah, we can let that one go. You saw me grow up. It is kind of weird.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I felt like that extra addition of Corlys in the room and them declaring at the end of the episode after kind of seeing everything play out was much more powerful than a letter from Corlys saying, we're in.
Or just assuming that they'll be on your side.
Exactly.
Yeah, that would have made a softer splash. I hope that people like that. Folks watching the show were like, yes, now we have this big naval force and the richest house in the realm, and now we don't have to worry less about the Lannisters or something.
It's a huge win. It's this, you know, Alicent was making in last episode this plea because she knew how big of a force that house has. And so, of course, we got to feel a little victorious that we've got
them
on our side.
Painted table.
That is my favorite part of the whole
crafty,
episode.
Y'all who made the show and showing us the candles being lit, even as such a it had such a satisfying technique in lighting the candles alone. I mean, that was only the beginning of the present that y'all had inside. They were lighting the candles like one of those YouTube videos, watching people make stuff in bulk. He had this technique down. I've been doing it for ages. Sliding into the candle drawer. Orange. Beauty. I mean, I guess that was probably real. Mm-hmm. I don't know much about that prop yet, but I would like to know if they carved the wood up to a certain depth so the candle, so it would, maybe they treated it so it would be able to withstand the heat of the candle and not color the bottom surface of the potentially clear wood. But when you carve it thinner there, you could shine stuff through that. I want something like that.
It was so freaking cool.
I was watching, I was like, well, I want one of those tables, but then I was thinking that would be weird.
With real flames underneath. I really liked how we
awesome.
Got, at the beginning of the episode, we got Luke running his hand over the table. So we got to see what it looked like before it was lit up like that. It made it even more impactful.
Yeah, that's cool.
Because it was like, that table does that. Yeah. I loved that.
Yeah, the answer is we do like stuff like that. People making TV shows. Mm-hmm. You can give us little things like that. It doesn't have to be way highbrow. You can set up a table and then set it up early in the episode and then show us like how it works and we'll be like,
we're so easy to please.
Yeah, for sure.
Also, that's the kind of merch we want. We don't need a blanket that says the dragons did that. We need these painted tables.
After Daemon's quote, I kind of am more into that. Dreams didn't do that. Dragons did.
Well, it's so much more powerful coming from him in that context than when we were hearing it before we even saw the show. Because wasn't that line in the trailer?
Yeah.
And
well,
it was like,
or at least on the pillow.
Right. It was so he knew about the line.
I think it was in one of the trailers.
It must have been. But Daemon freaking out about Rhaenyra quoting these dreams. And he makes such a good point of, and he makes the same point that Viserys was making to Rhaenyra, that all along is that like, well, actually, they're making opposite points.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, so, there's the same belief
so
in this.
Yeah, so they're at odds.
Power is an illusion, and that the Targaryens being the masters of all this is an illusion. We're a master of all of it because we have the dragons.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the same thing.
Kind of the same thing, but totally not. I guess in my brain, I was trying to make sense of the through line between that. But the through line is Rhaenyra believing in what her dad was trying to tell her. But I just felt like Daemon reiterating the fact that they can't win this based on vibes alone, clearly, because that chance has already been lost because the vibes belong to the Greens because all of the people of King's Landing are bought
Otto
in.
Otto named it off.
In
all
front
the
of everyone.
He's like, this is the list.
He says,
we have the clothes. I'm wearing the official seal.
I loved what he said. He said, every symbol of legitimacy belongs to Aegon. Every symbol of legitimacy.
Hell yeah.
That was such a good diss. And that's what Rhaenyra is arguing with the dreams of, like, this idea of power and this idea of responsibility and this idea versus Damon being like, there is no ideas if we don't, if we're not on top, if we're not winning, if right. we don't have our force out there trying to make something happen. So I kind of forgot about that quote in that scene because I was so annoyed that his hands were around her neck. But
so Viserys is peacetime. Listen, this magical tale is another way to build on top of all of this. And Damon's like, there's no time for that right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's not exactly a nice guy, Dad Damon, walking around being nice to his kids.
Right. So it kind of took me out of it a little bit. If we had kept that level of intensity the whole time, then maybe it would have felt...
That's true.
More through. But he's been kind of a background nice guy. I mean, I guess he chopped off Bateman's head.
Yeah. So, you see, we're confused. Everyone's confused on purpose.
Something else I was thinking about, and maybe this is to Damon's point, is you and me were watching this video about top 10 worst lines in Game of Thrones or something recently, or like 10 plot points that didn't make sense in Game of Thrones recently. And one of the big ones was when Tyrion basically says, Bran should be king because he has a good story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, but what else? Because we can't rule the realm with vibes and stories alone. That's not enough to secure position or power, is to tell everybody that you have a really good life story, which Bran's is, you know, we could argue whether his story is good or not.
Pretty interesting, Bran's story.
No, it is interesting, but you know what I mean? I was kind of also...
like, wait, you can do what if you... You touched a tree, and then what happened to you?
I'm not really here, whatever.
So where are you exactly? But even if what you're saying is true, it's not like she was saying we should focus on this
no.
and not fight anyone, and this is enough. She was saying we should be nice because magic exists.
Totally, and I'm taking it to the extreme, definitely, in my interpretation of what she said. And I think that... she does bear that responsibility that nobody else knows about. So she does need to think about it. But
do you think it was about something else? Or that's really part of the reason why? You think it might have been Alicent?
No, I don't.
I'm going to have to rewatch and really pay attention. But it was different. And the way that Damon reacted to it was different. That whole thing was pretty, like you said before, heavy-handed. So I'm going to need to try to figure out what they were trying to do with it. Because Now the lone showrunner is the one who wrote this episode. Ryan right. Condal wrote this episode, so there's some specific stuff in there. It's got to be a point behind her bringing it up again, and it didn't flash to the dagger, thank God. So
wasn't she surprised that Damon didn't know about it? She made some comment that I totally missed, so we'll have to talk about it in our midweek episode.
She was, yeah. She said he didn't tell you.
Yeah, she was surprised. I think she felt like they were on the same page there.
Yeah, like she seems to be a lot more holy about it than it seems like she would be. So yeah. I think we're supposed to believe she is pretty holy about it. So that's either their fault in the execution or our fault in not really buying into it and just eating popcorn and watching the spectacle of it. Because I guess she's shown that that's how she feels
right.
and believes throughout the course of the show. So we're all just going to have to just accept that.
Which is fine. And, you know, who knows how we'll feel, like you said, on the second rewatch. But I do think that it's going to be interesting to see their dynamic play out between the two of them and what they do or don't believe about how they should move forward. We got a lot of heavy looks in this episode.
What I saw here was just a sort of a crack begin to form,
unfortunately.
Because, I mean, that's a weird way to... It's really important right now what we say to each other, because we just learned about my brother dying, my father dying. We're talking to each other. And she says something like that, and just maybe if she would have said it in a different way, he would have bought it better. But it's just, it didn't work out. But the fact that they can have and it didn't work out is not a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
That it could go so south so quickly. I don't know whose fault it is or if it matters whose fault it is, but a little crack like that at the edge of a season finale and right in the beginning, when what looks to be a clash of two powers, two forces going against each other, you don't want that happening. But again, we saw a bunch of cracks on the side of the greens too, so
completely. I felt like Boris, that's his name, right?
Mm-hmm. Baratheon.
Summed it up so well when he was basically like, so the Targaryens can't decide who's who.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yo, this is the internal conflict that I don't need to be a part of. It was such a good, just a high level sweeping moment of, okay, Like, this is an internal conflict, and y'all need to figure something out before you start spilling your drama into my house.
And I think that's part of the reason why Rhaenyra's had this point of view of being potentially as close to the word civil as they could be, mm-hmm. while also getting what they want. And that's kind of wishfully what Allison's trying to do, too, as much as she can. And now that's not a thing. That's not a thing.
Now it's war.
It is a family conflict, and it just so happens to involve access, like keys to the kingdom, basically.
Right.
And so they kept that perspective, at least. They're from a different generation, though, a generation we saw them grow up from when she was 14. And so, yeah, we're going to do it differently. And it's just a family conflict, like Boros Baratheon said. House of the Dragon needs to get their house in order. Okay, we won't pull a ton of troops and blow up cities into this.
Until...
Wait a second.
Yeah, blood is spilled.
You
just killed my
kid. You didn't slice his eye open. He's dead.
Especially because Rhaenyra is going to interpret that as it happened on purpose. Anybody could say anything.
Of course. Your giant dragon bit him in half.
For funsies.
And his dragon. I mean, that's why I said if she would have seen it. I mean, God, the size of Vhagar, the horror of it. I mean, they would just come down on King's Landing. It would be too much. It would be too much. I guess they're used to the dragons, but it's very shocking to me. The whole thing is shocking. So keep making it shocking, y'all. Keep making it cool. Keep making it feel way more serious than it needs to, because we don't have to have TV shows to survive. We don't have to have stories about dragons, witches, wizards. Kids, grown-ups, babies, dragon babies. We don't need any of this stuff. But if you're going to do it, commit to it so hard that we like someone like Otto Hightower.
I know.
Okay.
I can't believe we're at the end. I can't believe that's episode 10.
So let's do our owns of the final episode. And, of course, we've got our midweek episode following this finale episode. And like Hannah said before, some more after the season Hot D podcasts. And why am I saying that part now? I'll say it after owns. What's your own?
My first own goes to the table when the candles were lit underneath it. I just loved that. It felt like very intense. I thought it was really cool. Loved, loved, loved that. And then my second own is going to go to when the silhouette that we get of Vhagar flying over Luke. I just thought that was such an unbelievable shot, and I loved it for all the reasons we talked about: the scaling, the intensity, the build up to that moment. It was scary, and I thought it ruled. So, own to the silhouette.
Cregan Stark being mentioned.
Shout out.
And really just the focus on River Run and what is forming in my mind a vision of season two, feeling like traditional Game of Thrones, bouncing around some familiar places, which after the slow burn of waiting for this, and then after the promise that is now being made, after this was so good, depicting that kind of stuff, oh, I'm so excited. Put me in the right state of mind for all that, for sure. And also to Rhaenyra for, in this episode, literally being pregnant, going through some kind of a birth, a crazy one, acted insanely, and still doing all of the business of dealing with what she feared happening, finally happening. That was just wild how they framed all that together. It has the energy of Eric arriving at the funeral at the perfect time, of the messenger arriving to Daemon and early in the season in the middle of the war council. Mm-hmm. All at the perfect time. It has the energy of that, but that's what happens in fantasy books. Mm-hmm. It has that energy, but it has all the crazy roars of a dragon they're recorded really well. Mm-hmm. Or the screams of birth. We don't just cut away from it. You might see the dead little baby on the ground. I know it's hard. I know it's tough.
We saw her pull it out.
It's not pleasing, but dragons are scary. Sometimes they're big and they can bite really hard. But also fantasy can be fun and should be fun. And so go ahead and let them show up at the right time if it makes the scene work better and it makes all of this important and magical. Because it should be, because they're Targaryens, right?
Mm-hmm. Or they're closer to gods than men. As Rhaenyra reminds us.
The exceptionalism.
So those are our owns. If you want to send in your own, your thoughts, your feelings, etc., you can find us on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter by searching for Game of Owns. Tweet at us all week. We're going to be asking questions later this week. We're going to be retweeting your owns. So keep them coming as we wrap up season one of House of the Dragon.
Team Hannah, thank you for joining me on these Sunday nights. Let's keep doing the podcast, shall we?
Let's never stop.
We'll be back really soon.
Bye.